on this episode of Edge of the Web.
That's where this data is exactly it. You start to see an influx of people typing in a particular type of query or a particular type of problem on a regular basis.
Right.
How, as a salesperson, are you not bringing that topic up when you're having conversations? Like, isn't that the entire point? To me, that data as a salesperson, I would be begging for that.
Your weekly digital marketing trends with industry trend-setting guests. You're listening and watching Edge of the Web. Winners of Best Podcast from the Content Marketing Institute for 2017. Hear and see more at edgeofthewebradio.com. Now, alongside Tom Broadbeck, here's your host, Aaron Sparks.
Okay, so we're broadcasting from Edge Media Studios. You may have actually been wondering about that disclaimer. I'll let you know here very, very shortly who we have in the studio. We're located in downtown Indianapolis, Indiana, and every week we're bringing you the latest marketing trends in the digital space, as well as marketing influencers from around the planet. Check out all the recent shows over at edgeofthewebradio.com, edgeofthewebradio.com. We're powered by Site Strategics, the title sponsor of the show, and the parent company of us over here at Edge. We're focused on Agile digital marketing. If you want to know what that is, it's results-based marketing. Who knew? You can actually steer by that and actually have more effective marketing month over month. So if you're interested in what that means to you, give us a shout over at sitestrategics.com, or you can call us over at our vanity number, 877-SEO for web. Yep, we've had that for 15 freaking years.
We're so vain.
We're so vain. Or 877 for the ones who don't want to even translate into the words, because that pisses me off too. 877-736-4932. I'm your host, Aaron Sparks, the owner of Site Strategics and founder of Edge Media Studios. The reason that we do this show, we say it every show, but we want to make sure that you, the new listener, understands, is that there's so much in the digital marketing space that is brand new, and it needs to be unpacked and kind of talked about, demystified. At the same time, we also want to debunk some concepts and tactics that don't work for your site or for your digital brand. Especially, don't pack in the same colored words at the bottom of the footer of your page. That stuff, you don't want to do that. Anyway, for SEO, social media, search engine marketing, conversion rate optimization, all the different areas in which you can actually improve your digital landscape, this is what we talk about on the show on a regular basis. And it also helps us, to be selfishly honest with you, it helps us actually learn new things that are happening so we can bring that to our own Site Strategics clients. So that's why we do what we do. To my left, we have got Tom Broadbeck, Director of Digital Media.
Hey, hey. How's it going?
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey, we're the monkeys.
Oh, my Lord, you're kind of springy today.
Springy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Andy went old school.
We're supposed to get 4 inches of snow tonight, so.
You are kidding me.
Springy. No.
What?
3 to 4 inches tonight to tomorrow.
Where'd that come from?
And then 50 on Saturday.
Weather.
it's the thing. It's weather. Okay, you've heard her, and now I got to show her on camera. To my right is Erin Eckerson, and she's literally cheering already. You're cheering the camera. Look at that. Look at that. I promised her, and here it is. President and COO of Demand Sphere, Erin. It's great to be able to have you in the studio.
It's always fun to be here. Next time, not so long in between visits.
It's been 4 years, Erin.
What I feel like is maybe you just couldn't afford nicer bourbon to lure me back.
Wow. See?
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
You're going to throw down like that already.
Yep. It's early. We just got to go ahead and break it in.
Well, Erin, it's great to be able to have you. It's always good to have somebody in studio so we can actually make fun of them here and now, as opposed to remotely. Sadly enough, whenever we have a Zoom connection, when we start making fun of somebody, they kind of break up and disappear sometimes. But we've locked the door, so we're going to be able to.
I brought the bottle in, so.
So we're set.
All right, hunker down. That 4 inches of snow. We're good.
Sweet. 4 inches. Are you serious?
That's what they say, but who knows?
I didn't even hear about that one.
Surprise.
You live in Indianapolis. How is this that surprising?
It's true. It's absolutely true. Well, every show we go through the digital marketing news of the day. So, Erin, you've been prepped. You've been given the news about 10 minutes before the show. So you ready to dive into the wonderful landscape that we have right now?
I will respond to any news you want to bring up and make crappy comments.
All right. We've set the standards.
That's what I do.
All right, so let's take you through the latest digital marketing news.
I was very excited to start my reportings.
This week's trending topics.
All right, so right out of the gate from Mount Southern, and don't insult the writers, okay? Hold back. Mm-hmm. From Search Engine Journal, Google is letting all online retailers upload product data to search results. So, Tom, tell us about this.
So if you have an e-commerce website, this is definitely something you need to take advantage of here. So Google announced it's expanding its merchant center capabilities to all online retailers, allowing them to directly provide up-to-date data, product information, product data feeds uploaded to Google Merchant Center are eligible to display in search results and will be updated in real time. You don't even need to have a Google Ads account to take advantage of this. So,
and that's the big change right there is that you've always had to have an AdWords account or ads account to be able to take advantage of that the merchandising and the merchant side of things. And now, mm-hmm. I mean, they're just getting flush with data, right?
Yeah. Ooh, programmatic SEO. Yeah. Like the rise of programmatic SEO finally, because there's more opportunity for it. Like alternative search engines like Amazon,
right.
Other places where, you know, that have their own algorithm to do this kind of stuff. I think that the templatized and smarter version of product pages is hopefully upon us. Fingers crossed.
Well, we had Schema for a while as the way to be able to try to adjust those ranking opportunities. But now they're going to be giving us more opportunities in the feed and the XML data itself.
Yep.
So they're going to widen the different types of factors that we can send them. So this is very, very good.
Yep.
It's finally. I mean, this stuff should have been done 10 years ago.
The problem is, will people actually staff to it the smart way and like really dig in and get it done right? So they're giving us an opportunity, but it's also people's just, it's their opportunity to lose. Yeah.
Right.
It's
absolutely.
It's yours for the missing.
That's the thing. If you, online retailers, if you don't take advantage of it, and it's free, literally, you are now separating yourself out of running for, you know, what can be easily optimized for. So, I mean, if you're not paying attention to it, and there's going to be a huge crowd that won't, I mean, this is a defining moment for online retailers. So get your stuff together. Any thoughts about that, Tom?
Nope. No thoughts.
No thoughts whatsoever.
I like Tom so much.
I can't go with that. I can't go anywhere except there.
I don't think.
From Greg Sterling over at Search Engine Land, talking about shopping again, more shopping ads coming to Google Images. Now, this is really, really interesting. And Google Images has been a space that needed to have a good bootstrap. It's been kind of the redheaded stepchild. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm nobody's stepchild. Dear child.
Well, similar to ad units on Instagram and Pinterest, Google introduced shopping ads on Google Images at the Shop Talk conference on Tuesday. The sponsored image highlight products that will actually, when moused over, reveal the brand, price, and other details. But Google isn't stealing from others. Google debuted Shoppables AdWords formats on YouTube in 2015. And the last year, it piloted an earlier version of Shoppable ads. We talked about that actually here just recently. Who do we have on show?
Shoppable ads.
Yeah. I'll catch
somebody
up.
Somebody memorable,
okay.
I'm sure.
Evidently. Sorry.
We had Elizabeth Martson. That was kind of the Google shopping we were talking about. That.
Absolutely. And that was for third-party websites and in Google search. So now it's coming to bear on the images side of things. And I pray that it's not going to get cluttered up because images have been a library resource mentality for a while. But this is actually going to be able to put promotional images in the image search environment. So,
but was it really Google's job to provide us free image searching? Not to be a jerk, right? Like, so obviously the Goog can be uber googly, but they are.
That's a sentence. That literally was a sentence there.
It's a noun, it's a verb, it's an adjective.
The Goog can be overly googly.
It's
like
real.
A haiku.
I'm going to put it on a shirt. I'll send it to you. Extra large, right?
Oh, nice.
There you go.
Wow.
And so.
I got a mute button right here, by the way.
Use it. You invited me. No, I think that it's not necessarily Google's job to provide us with like a free resource to steal images or to like break people's copyright or whatever it is. And if you are looking for images, they do still provide a lot of that. I agree with you about not wanting it to be overly cluttered because that is what shopping results and other things are for. And that is what certain other sites are specifically for. But I think that what they're potentially responding to, if I had to be devil's advocate, is what people are already trying to accomplish. accomplish, right? So they're just trying to be the connective tissue in an already logical thing. They do plenty of other evil stuff that we can rail about. I'm just not sure this is like high up there on the evil scale.
Sure.
So we're gonna have a Google evil meter.
Where on My Little Pony to Despicable Me, like, do you happen to fall at any given time?
Oh, we're gonna have to meme that. That's too funny. Obviously Pinterest and Instagram have already taken major ground in that space, and that's what was expected. I guess monetizing everything, right? I guess is what the consumer should expect, right? But in the same vein, it's going to get cluttered, and especially in the mobile side of things, they got to be really astute on how they put that sponsored image. And there are, throw that back on screen if you would, Noah, some of the mobile views of that.
Yeah, I mean, from that perspective, I don't think that's too cluttered. I think that makes useful sense from a user's usability standpoint. That I want to know that chair, I want to know that desk, and. Mm-hmm. And having those clickable within that, I think
it depends on what you're searching for too, right? So, I mean, a lot of this is context-based usage, so not every
tactical kilts.
Why would you shop, or why would you image search a tactical kilt if you weren't actually looking to buy one?
Well, you've got to compare. You got to compare side by side.
But then you can hover over and see how much it costs, and compare it to the other one you hovered over.
There you go.
Let's just don't be careful how you hover, because it could blow up. And
I feel like you've spent too much time looking at skirts and are kilts! a little too concerned.
They're cool. I mean, they're honestly, if I could get away with it, if I would be allowed to get away with it.
Should I put the Googby acting googly on your kilt then and ship it to you?
Alexa's probably already tracking me with a particular ad. Exactly. She opened up there right there, right? So kilts are actually going to be showing up on my Amazon Prime shopping anyway. Again, another area, just like, you know, so many other digital areas, it is now getting monetized yet again. So we're just going to hold on, and hopefully it doesn't really dissuade people. But, you know, hey, you're right. It wasn't their free service to begin with. They just baited us with image search this long period of time.
Yeah, I mean, you really want to Shutterstock that shiz. I mean, sign up for an account.
Okay, from Emily Berry over at MarketWatch, more people are using smart speakers but not shopping. Who'd have thought?
Like, I'm sorry, does she mean shopping via smart speakers? Because you're right, I did get these like 10 minutes beforehand. So, sorry, Emily, I'm sure this article.
Roll with the title.
For shopping.
Yeah,
you said,
exactly.
But not shopping. Noted.
They're not shopping via the smart speaker.
I would be, well, so outside of Amazon, trying to like Alexa you into like being in the bathroom and be like, order me more toilet paper and see if it can be droned here in the next 3 to 7 minutes. I'm not sure why anybody's that surprised at this point.
Right.
But I think that maybe they didn't build in like a lag phase of what that would actually look like. Outside of, I have heard really fun anecdotal stories about little kids figuring out how this works and managing to order themselves stuff, which I love. I'm like, that's great.
Figure out that you got to lock down your code, folks, because if the little girl or boy knows your PIN, you're screwed.
And guess what? Nobody has to be good before Santa anymore. All you got to do is Alexa stuff and be like, yeah, I'm not going to brush my teeth before bed.
Why doesn't Santa have Prime, Daddy?
Suck it, Santa. I'm going to Prime this.
So if you want to go ahead.
Yeah, the top use of an Amazon Alexa or Google Home is to play music. I think most people would agree with that. Weather forecast is too. Mm-hmm. I don't see make fart noises on this list anywhere.
Also an option.
But I do have a confession to make, Aaron. Yes, so this last weekend, my wife and I, we went to the glorious Taco Bell for dinner one night. And I pull up to
That's a fine dining date there, man.
So I pull up.
That's the confession.
Pull up, and I put the car in park because
there's more.
My wife has to look at the menu, right? It's Taco Bell. Has to look at the menu. So whatever. So I'm waiting for her to look at the menu to decide. And so I'm waiting, looking at my phone. She says she's ready. So rather than saying to the cashier window thing, saying, okay, I'm ready, I say, okay, Google.
Oh, my.
To the Taco Bell lady.
Wow.
My wife laughed at me. I laughed a lot. And the cashier at Taco Bell laughed at me.
Did your droid phone laugh at you, though?
Okay, Google.
Your droid, it was probably trying to find another Taco Bell.
It's like, okay, Google, I like three tacos. Oh, my God.
That's the harbinger of doom, man.
One day it might happen. Maybe I'm just
You're future speak right there.
Yeah.
So we're going to have fast food drone to us, right?
Yeah. So I did not see making Taco Bell orders on the list either.
I would be interested to know more of like the smart home integrations and like list making aspect of things. So for me, shopping purchases don't necessarily fall into like immediate needs outside of like a few scopes of stuff. So if I'm going to buy stuff, I'm going to buy a list of things. So, you know, Samsung obviously and LG, I believe, came out with their refrigerators and different versions where you could make lists of things that seem to be running low in your refrigerator, or put the list in there and it'll send it to your phone and you could kind of monitor how frequently you need stuff. And if it synced up with that, that would be potentially useful to me. But I mean, I think part of it too is I don't necessarily just want to order things one off that way. I would like to just get everything together. The same way that, you know, buying Whole Foods, right?
Yeah.
So now you can actually just order it all. You can then either have it delivered or pick it up straight from there. Like, that's a little bit easier for me to stomach.
Yeah,
I think, and to summarize this, you know, the shopping experience hasn't been mapped out yet. And, I mean, people are just still getting acclimated into using the smart speaker. And you can see by that behavior grid right there. That, I mean, it's natural to go into that. Yeah. You're not going to shop with a discovery mindset. You're going to shop for something that literally you've already shopped for. So it's an ease of access type of thing, as opposed to comparing two things. There's no medium right here to be able to do that type of evaluation.
Well, and you also have to be able to name brand and quantity for like a lot of things, right? Because things come in different quantity packaging styles, and I mean, they're going to ask, are they even going to ask you what brand, or are they just going to send you whatever the heck they want to send you? I mean, and that to me runs like a little bit of a risk. So as we bridge this gap in expectation to execution, there's just some wiggle room.
Yeah. No, you better believe it. All right. Well, we always talk about smart speakers and you know, that new terrain, because there always is just one result in that space. And boy, either from an SEO standpoint or a monetized advertising standpoint, it's a wild west right now. Right?
Wild, wild west.
Except for the Apple Home device. That was like a failure to launch.
Is that what it's called?
There.
Apple Home?
I guess
Apple...
so. I don't know what the hell. Apple. I don't know. Apple. Big ass thing that never actually got embraced by the market. How about this? You know what is great for the market? Joining the Edge of the Web newsletter. So you can literally just with a click of the mouse go over to edgeofthewebradio.com, edgeofthewebradio.com, and join right there at the top of the header of the page. You can also text to the number 22828 right there on screen, or it soon will be. The number, the word Edge Talking, you can join us. Don't do it while you're driving. Well, I mean, you can listen to the show, but just don't text while you know what I mean. But every week we're actually sending out some great information about who we have talked to, some aha moments from the show, as well as some of the news articles that we've covered, and who we're going to be talking to next week. So we're already thinking about who we're going to be interviewing past Aaron, right? Right now we are. That's not weird at all, is it?
I mean, not to me. I was thinking about what I was going to have for dinner like 10 minutes ago.
Me too. Same.
You're buying tacos. All right. So if you want to check out what we're doing on Edge of the Web, go over there and sign up for the newsletter. We'd certainly appreciate it. And give us some feedback on how we're doing on that side of the fence as well. But for now, let's deep dive with this week's featured guest.
Now it's time for Edge of the Web featured interview with Aaron Acheson, President and COO of DemandSphere.
That is one. That is a bold mugshot right there.
I mean,
you look pissed.
I don't know. I usually am. So that's just. It was the only one to choose from. That's just my face.
I mean, she looks like she's about to shoot somebody.
I probably am.
And it could probably really happen today.
I told you it's in my purse right now.
No, you have her purse out there, right? Oh, crap, it's here. Damn. All right, let's introduce.
Yeah, you said you locked the door, right?
It's going to be a cage match, I swear. All right, so let's introduce Aaron. If you hadn't caught the show before, shame on you, because we had a great time last time she was on the show. And she also has done a couple segments on the show as well. Aaron has over 15 years of technology marketing strategy and business intelligence expertise with large enterprise and agencies, as well as startups alike. Her background includes behavioral studies, applied analytics, communication theory, and hunting. she also has spoken at a variety of conferences and events like PubCon, Content Marketing World, AdTech, FoundConf, and much more. So it's great to be able to have Aaron in-house again. It's always fun to be able to rib her a little bit. So thanks for coming in.
I love it here.
Great. All right, we're done.
Her favorite thing, yeah. It was great. I am going to go get dinner.
She laughed. She cried. It was better than cats. So, Aaron, give us your backstory. That's the official bio.
I was going to say, you did.
Well, I mean, that's the clean one. Give us the give us the true backstory.
So this one time when I was 7.
In band camp.
We promised to never talk about it again. Like you said, right, background in kind of like behavioral analytics and stats and communications, and have parlayed that through a lot of different opportunities. But for the last, starting my 7th year, I've been working at DemandSphere, which used to be Ginza Metrics. Mm-hmm. And that is a search content and competitor analytics platform that has offices in San Francisco, Tokyo, like 8 other places around the world. And we've recently moved another office to Columbus, Ohio, which is where I happen to reside. And I ended up going in-house to the platform side, to the vendor side, not because it wins you any popularity battles necessarily when you're doing stuff, because people assume you're trying to sell them things, but really because I kept struggling with a lot of the same problems over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I thought that there had to be a better way. I knew that there was a better way. I knew that we could create a better way, and that the information was there, the ability to create a UI was there, the ability to surface real relevant, I hate to use the word insights, but insights was there. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what we've been over there tackling, and that's where we're at.
And I mean that is an absolute important area of discovery, because there's so many users of SaaS software and marketing tools. And we've seen such a gamut of things come through over the last 20 years. And it has been the kind of the plight of the digital marketer that they couldn't find one tool. And there never will be one tool that will solve everything from an insight standpoint. But we were always seeing, it'd be great if this did this. Mm-hmm. And very few take that step to go actually build something. So
yep.
So you're a bit brave there. And congratulations on the acquisition. It's great to be able to have to see a marketer on that side steering software and steering development. So kudos.
Yeah, I was going to actually say that I think sometimes if you know, you can only complain so much without, kind of either putting your money where your mouth is or giving real relevant feedback, right? So I think that saying something sucks is not the same thing as describing what the suckage is. And I really need like better feedback. And so I try to elicit that from folks that we work with when somebody wants something. But that's actually how I met Ray, who mm-hmm. actually originally founded Ginza Metrics. I was on Twitter lamenting kind of the disparity of tools, and I had used Ginza Metrics, which was then very nascent, as well as a slew of other things, including like Moz and different stuff. And I said, I want this from this and this from that. And, you know, Ray responded back actually to me on Twitter and was just like, I would really like to hear more about that.
Oh, cool.
Like, why? Like, he's like, you seem to have some really specific ideas about what it is you're looking for. And that's actually how all this kicked off. So I think that if you're going to give feedback, like try to be specific, not just complainy.
Yeah, have some backup, have some true data behind it.
Yeah. But
absolutely. That's fantastic. I didn't know that side of the equation. So you bitched and moaned and until you got a job.
Yeah. And then here we are. Still just bitching and moaning, having kind of a job.
There you go. All right. Well, Aaron, we've always had a great conversation about different concepts when it comes down to online marketing and the consumer journey. And I know that gets overused so often, but
don't use the word funnel.
I won't say buyer's journey at least probably 3 times. So that's about it. But you know, there is a constant dialogue about how marketing and sales can work together. How they both serve each other, but they're also sometimes diametrically opposed. You had a recent article that DemandSphere just brought out, and that was entitled Bridging the Gap Between Content Creation and Marketing Strategy. So that in its own right, I'd love to be able to unpack, because there are some sincere points that producers or content creators should be able to garner from strategy and strategics. Strategically,
you're going to get there. It's going to be fine.
Strategists.
We're here for you.
I need a lifeline. Strategists need to know how to communicate to content creators as well, yep. Right? So give us a load on what was the article all about, and why does this gap exist?
Oh, man. Well, so I will not delve too far into why the gap exists, because a lot of it's just systemic corporate culture or the...
Because they suck.
Right, suckage. Sorry. But just like, I mean, and it's like, sometimes you don't know you suck or you don't know why you suck or you know something sucks, but you don't know how to unsuck it. So like, I think that there's just potentially, you know, a lot to that, right? So instead of focusing on the genesis of the problem, which is fun from like a cultural anthropology standpoint, it's often not useful because a lot of times people don't have anything that they can do with it, right? So even if I told them why, they're like, oh, great, like, and then? So I was trying to go at the like, and then. And to me, a lot of it is, it's, I don't want to use the word siloed, but like disparate teams within organizations and lack of sharing. But to me, it's never a lack of data for the most part. Mm-hmm. It's a lack of understanding why you should care about someone else's data and what you would want to do with it if you had it, and whose hands you'd want to get it into. So a good example of something that I find a breakdown in really regularly is search data. In terms of people understanding how people are searching, how that's changing, what people's queries look like, and the way that people are interacting with search. Like, are they doing more product-based search? Are they doing more informational-based search? And then not just content creation from the, like, landing page standpoint, but why is there not a white paper titled that? Or why is there not an email with that as its subject line? Or why are you not mining for your hashtags on social media from your search keywords? Or figuring that out. So there's all of these pieces of connective tissue that we're essentially just ignoring across most organizations. And there are just so few places that are tying that stuff together.
So, I mean, in the same vein as if you're trying to have consistent imagery across all the different mediums and all the different delivery points, the same aligns with intent and understanding how to message intent, and that there should be almost like a style guide of how you're communicating and how you're messaging, regardless, not regardless, but in tune with the imagery that is more like a brand guide, right?
Yeah, and the thing that I think is hard is it shifts a lot, right? Because intent shifts, because product shift, because the market and the landscape shift. And so similar to a lot of companies will have a style guide that's 5, 7, 10 years old, right? Which I also don't agree with. That's usually actually potentially less damaging than creating content based on data that's 5, 10 years old, right? And so if you're not regularly keeping pace with how the audience is looking for things when they have a problem or when they have a need, and then remarketing back, because that's what a lot of marketing trend is seeing. So I was moderating a panel last week, 2 weeks ago, whatever. Sometime in 2019, I was moderating a panel.
It's early. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. So the gap is small. But I was moderating a panel, and we were doing digital marketing trends for 2019, and people were naming a lot of different things, but everything basically centered back on this idea of a more personalized experience with content. And whether that was online or offline content, we actually had somebody there who does experiential branding and marketing, like within spaces. And so they work a lot with retail customers. But they talked about the tying between that personalized experience and then the person's personalized experience with like an email campaign or your website or a landing page that they're getting to. And
I fair to say it's probably much more organic in the retail space because there are observational styles there to be able to see, okay, this is not working, but there's no discipline on the observations and be able to have a feedback loop on how to change your content.
Right. I mean, so you have kiosks, you have all these people who are interacting with things, who are describing their problems, their wants, their needs on a regular basis, which we're listening to when we track keywords or when we're doing traditional SEO things a lot, or maybe when somebody's creating some content, but it's typically just on-site content. Mm-hmm. We're not pitching contributed articles that way. We're not creating our different email strategies that way. Mm-hmm. We're not changing the text in our freaking paid. Why would you not change? Because from a sociological and psychological standpoint, we like mirroring, right? Like, we like it if somebody's sitting like this, like back with their leg crossed in this, like we will naturally mirror what they're doing. And we like that about people. Why would you not mirror your advertising campaign and your email strategy and your influencer strategy to match how people are natively describing what they're doing? And we're just not doing it.
Is it that we don't know how to listen? Sorry to be that.
Somebody's still got some serious millennial trash talking to do today, don't they?
Just saying, just gonna open up that can of worms.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's listening, but I think it's it's the why to listen, right? I think some of it is they don't see the value in what that would be, and let's just say purely from a laziness standpoint. What if I could just tell
back
you
in my
instead?
My millennial front.
I was just trying to get into your wheelhouse. I was like, what would he want to make his life easier? I'm going to help you.
Thank you, appreciate it.
No, but I mean, think about it. If instead of having to spend all this time creating these editorial calendars or all these other things about trying to create a content calendar, what if you let people's own native like wants and needs and search queries and social media conversations and reviews that they post on stuff help you dictate what it is that you're going to be talking about and mirror back to them how they're describing it, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, it's taking work off of your plate and it's creating a way more cohesive experience across everything.
That sounds simple, right? But at the same time,
don't make it scarier than it has to be.
No, but you also have to be authentic at the same time. Is that
what's more authentic than listening to what somebody said that they wanted and then giving it to them?
Except if they are not being able to provide that from the product or the service.
Nobody said to lie. Come on.
We're talking marketing here.
That's advertising.
Yeah. Don't confuse the two. All right. So you've got to be able to mirror. You got to be able to have the techniques and the channels to be able to hear to adjust your course of content, right?
Yep.
So you have to be able to set those in place so you can listen, but also have the discipline inside the organization to carry that message over to the content producer.
Right.
Right. So there is a big gap right there because the strategist, right, mm-hmm. or the analysis mm-hmm. of that needs to have some sort of cultural way to connect to whomever's producing this, and they have to be able to buy into it too.
And that's really hard, right? So we're talking about a lot of times changing corporate culture. And so if you look at it at a smaller scale, potentially from campaign to campaign mm-hmm. or from one department to another. So say I can't crack the advertising nut with my like good ideas from using search data, but like maybe somebody over an email, if I sent them a list of five topics that mm-hmm. I had seen really rise quickly in not just search volume, but like intensity of like frequency of articles or content from the rest of the market. So I'm like, okay, we have something in the product called like Catching Fire that basically does this. And I know that the name is a little stupid and I came up with it. So it's totally fine. That
wow, well, way to fall on your sword there
it's,
real quick.
It's bad. But I wasn't going to give you the chance. when I think about it, it's like what you're really looking for is this groundswell of things where there's a lot of great content that's coming out and it's all ranking really well and there's a higher search volume than average and things like that. And you're like, hey, why wouldn't we get out in front of this with like some, you know, kind of kick-ass email and things like that. So am I allowed to say ass? I think I am. I think that's
not three times, though.
I'm actually just checking to see how quickly he can beat me out. I think that if you look at it on either a campaign or campaign-to-campaign basis or a team-to-team basis and you have the opportunity to ask people for kind of like a pilot program or a mm-hmm. trial program, see if you can actually get things to perform a little bit better. Even if you don't get them to use the specific exact verbiage that you want them to use, if you can just give them topics, you know, that's usually really helpful. And part of what I think is also really hard is convincing people to step outside because they're afraid of what happens if it doesn't work. And a lot of times, not to be a total dick, but what you're doing isn't working as well as it could be working anyway. So you're really not like sacrificing that much. And to be honest, what's going to happen if you just don't write about that email topic today? You write about it 2 days from now.
By the way, your customer's over here. You're still not talking to them. What's the big risk?
Yeah, really, the risk isn't, I mean, because we're not advocating that anybody post anything necessarily like salacious on, you know, social or whatever. We're just talking about you mirroring back like the types of things somebody already cares about.
So there are some tools out there, a lot of tools, to be able to do research and be able to hear intent and be mm-hmm. able to group and categorize. A big explosion across a lot of the marketing platforms have been being able to isolate the questions that people are asking more of, especially in our voice search. I wouldn't say that we're not in the golden area yet, but I mean, this is certainly coming into focus that people are no longer even spending the time to long tail themselves to a particular specific thing.
Yep.
They're looking for this organic type of questioning of the smart speaker, right? So that shows intent, that shows clarity, that shows decision, that shows intent to purchase, as well as it unpacks several other forks in the road of concepts, right? Mm-hmm. That actually could be very well a bridge to some people that don't look at analytics nearly as much as the SEO geeks in the house, right?
Yeah, I think that so if you take sales, because I think that this is actually a really great segue into why sales folks should be just like clamoring all over this concept is and they're not diametrically opposed or forces against each other. Question-based selling is actually a really popular way to handle sales. And it's better than solution-based selling because it says, I have a solution and let me tell you why you need it. Instead of identifying a need, creating urgency around a solve for the need, and then explaining how you have something that helps solve the need. And if you don't, and we do this, honestly, is I have like a little form right now that's like, is one of our products right for you based on whatever complaint you just, you know, levied? And if you, and if one of ours isn't right, I'll actually suggest one that is. Huh. I'll suggest somebody else's platform. I do it all the time. Huh. I don't want crappy customers. But I mean, and a crappy customer to me is not defined as somebody who is a crappy person, and sometimes they are, but like it's more defined as somebody who's not a great fit and who is either going to be trying to shove a square peg into a round hole or is going to be like complaining otherwise about like the lack of good fit, and we don't want that. So but I think that, you know, when you create, when you identify a need and then you create urgency around the need, and this is sales, salespeople love that, right? Because that's a strategic selling tactic. That's how they get on the phone. That's how they close business is like they figure out what your pain point is, and then they figure out if they can solve it. And if they can solve it, then they sell to you because you have an urgent problem or you have something that you didn't even know was a problem, but now you do. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's where this data is exactly it. You start to see an influx of people typing in a particular type of query or a particular type of problem on a regular basis. Right. How, as a salesperson, are you not bringing that topic up when you're having conversations? Like, isn't that the entire point? So you're mirroring back to them, but you're live. Like, you're on the phone, you're having these conversations, you're in a store, you're doing whatever it is. I think that, to me, that data as a salesperson, I would be begging for that.
That's right. That's
Give me the top 20 topics around this product line or this feature set or this, you know, whatever it is. Like, give me that.
Well, conversely, the strategists should be listening to the salespeople because those questions change over time.
I literally mine my salespeople's emails for keywords. And people are like, so...
Not creepy at all.
Well, no. I mean, you're outbound, like the response, like the outbound and immediate response is back. But it's the same thing I do with product reviews and forums and things like that is like, I will mine product reviews for keywords to understand what's going on. Because I want to know not just what happened prior that got you in here. I want to know what happened once you'd had, once the rubber had met the road for a little while, right? Mm-hmm. You'd had some time. How were you describing, like, what was good, what was bad, what worked, what didn't work, and, you know, what does, what impact does that have? And then that's great for product marketing too.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, not only, I mean, going into customer service and what they're fielding. So you have the sales, but you also have people that are truly answering these pain points. And that's a great thing for R&D. I mean, we're talking about a holistic listening discipline, right?
Listening discipline, and then figuring out, and the idea is you start small, right? Mm-hmm. You don't say, here's the 27,000 like list of words of things and all the ways that you could be using it. You pick a couple of key topics, you find a couple of places to disseminate it, you see what that ends up doing. And then as that kind of grows, you build out that program bigger and it becomes corporate culture, right? Mm. But it's not an overnight shift. It would be really hard, and I'm not saying you can't do it. I would love to see somebody do it. But you're not just going to show up one day at the office and been like, we're going to have a listening culture and like, this is how it's going to work. And today, this is what you're going to do. So because it's not going to change, I think you do have to set your expectations that you're going to, you know, when I say bridge the gap, I mean, building a bridge takes a while, right? And so you've got to be committed to bridge building. Customer service is like is a really fun example, too, because I think customer service sometimes you'll ask them for like what they're hearing and they'll feel like they're not getting anything back. So usually my trade-off with customer service folks is, or like customer success folks is, I'm actually just going to create you some really sick resources because it looks like you're getting the same question a lot and you don't have anything. So like beyond just an FAQ page, I'm actually going to get you some real resources, like a video or whatever to show you how to answer the problem. And then they're like, oh, now I'll totally hand you some of this info. But before that, when you're just asking and asking, you're like, yeah, I don't want to spend my time
They're not
getting
in.
You this data. Like, I have to spend my lunch hour. I need to stay an extra hour late to, like, get you all this info. Like, nothing's going to help me. So I'm like, yeah, no, but what if I give you some resources that'll save you a few hours?
It has to do with everybody's particular vantage point and how it benefits them.
Yep.
Right? So across the horn, around the horn. So are we dealing with customer service, or dealing with sales, or dealing with a lot of great data in the analytics standpoint? And there's a lot of different ways to listen, but it is cross-departmental. It's not just from analytics. Now, we have a fount of keyword data. You got a fount of questions that our tools show us, right?
Yep.
But it's not really going to permeate that membrane of customer service unless it's valuable to them in one way, shape, or form and saves them time.
Yeah, I think we've actually managed to scare people a little bit with, and I mean, I build an analytics tool, so it's, you know, hard to say this, but we've shown people a little too much of, you know, like the behind the scenes magic or whatever it is, because now there's this idea that because we have the data, something should be happening, but what's actually should be happening is you. Like, right. You should be happening. And so it's not that data can be complicated and can be big and can be intimidating, but the tool that you're using should not present it as such unless you want that layer. The tool that you're using should present it as, this is the question you have about your data. Here is the insight or the answer, or here's what you should do next with this information. I think that giving somebody a huge dashboard that's just filled with widgets and numbers and all mm-hmm. kinds of things makes people go back to what they were doing before, which is not listening, mm-hmm. not sharing, not doing these things, because they take a look at this, or that data is just owned by people who only want to live in data, and they're not the practical right. end task marketer, right?
Yep.
So there are very few people who are both the analyst and the final content creator.
Yeah, it's never going to happen. And that right there, the bridging, right, is there's a development of a cobble industry of how to translate from one discipline to another discipline, right? So what tools can companies use to make this data sharing easier?
Man, I think a lot of it is not because I don't want to just list out necessarily company names, because I think different organizations fit well for different sure. types of companies. So to me, what I think that you really need is you need something that can very easily mine multiple types of content. Mm-hmm. So some sort of like content extraction situation where you can look at email, you can look at landing pages, you can look at competitors' landing pages, mm-hmm. like something that you're really able to dig in.
Potentially
and
even
for
customer
keywords.
Service complaint logs and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. Right. So we've got a tool inside the platform for that, but other people do as well. So mm-hmm. like depending on what your needs are, I would say that something like that is really helpful. I think that somewhere that you can not just aggregate all of that knowledge, but pull in kind of quick comparisons is really good. But again, start small, like start with smaller data sets. Chances are that if you work for a really big organization and this isn't happening, you have a BI team somewhere mm-hmm. or you've got all of this information and they would send you like a 10 million line spreadsheet. But to me, start small, right? So, you know, and not start small. Like, here's the thing you shouldn't do. If somebody were going to send you this huge spreadsheet full of just, you know, myriad data,
right.
don't just say, I just want the top 10 of everything. No. What you want is you want to singularly focus. You want to pick a product or a feature mm-hmm. or a specific area. And then you might even want to drill down even further than that and get that set of data, right? Mm-hmm. And then you want to look at the emails or social posts that have gone out about that. You want to look at the offsite content. You want to look at the experiential marketing. You want to look at offline. You want to look at paid. You want to see what's happened with that specific thing. So,
Reddit is a huge value in that space.
Yeah.
The Reddit forums themselves give you the unadulterated perspective of consumers.
Yep. And I think that, so to me, a lot of it is like the tool that will work best for you is whatever allows you in your role, because we could be talking to people who are email marketers. We could be talking to people who are social media strategists. We could yep. be talking to people right now who are, you know, content editors. So to me, what we're really looking for is, you know, whatever tool will help you listen best mm-hmm. And aggregate that information and put it in a format you understand and can use is the right tool for you.
Start small and be able to plug into multiple departments on a focused element, as opposed to the tomes of data that you can, and everybody, you just throw it in the room and it's like a cage match. Okay, go. Yeah. Try to figure something out. Nobody's bought in. Nobody knows how to even process that data.
No, I mean, and even just one or two departments, right? I mean, maybe you've got 20 different types of departments and you're like, that feels overwhelming, which it would be. Maybe you start with two or three. I think, honestly, in my opinion, search, email, and social are the most logical to start with because it's where you'll see probably the fastest returns because those things are more instantaneous. So it'll either improve open rates and click rates or it won't. It'll either improve social engagement rates or it won't. And social's kind of flash in the pan if it's up and it's back down.
The metrics are more basic to be able to be able to see that response.
And faster to see the response. So you'll actually figure out whether or not it's working a little bit quicker, right? Like paid usually requires creative, you know, like any sort of advertising like requires some sort of creative a lot of times or approval processes that you may not have access to. I think that those couple things are usually really quick and easy.
Very good. Well, I know you got a hard stop here. You got to bounce out of here. Give me one final thought here on horror stories that you've seen.
Do I have
companies,
to pick just one?
companies that are trying to cross-departmentalize their data. What should companies avoid? What have you seen that really turned ugly real fast?
So I'll give you
not to leave on a bad note.
No. I think that what I see happen a lot, and it's not, unfortunately, it's not one company. It's a ton of companies. It's I spend all this time doing reporting. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten on the phone with people when I've talked to them about the product because I actually still get on the phone and do some of our discovery calls and some of our demo calls because I still want to hear. Again, it's about listening.
Yeah.
I want to hear what it is people are describing as their problems. I don't just leave a sales team to run around or an account management team to run around and I don't ever listen in, right? Mm-hmm. I just get in and I take calls sometimes, which I learn so much every time. But I hear the same complaint a lot. Oh, if I used your tool, I would be saving myself 5, 10, 15, 20 hours a month on building reports. And I ask myself, I'm like, okay, so sure, I'm going to save you time. But beyond saving you time, which I do care about, I want you to be able to be more strategic and not just be building a report. What happens to the report once you build it? It just goes to somebody and then nothing. To me, there's no bigger horror story than busy work. And like
the TPL
just this Sisyphean battle of like, I'm just going to every day wake up or like four times a month, like once a week or every month, spend 2 days building these huge reports that I know nobody's going to look at. Or they're going to look at them and they're going to be like, it went up and to the right. Like, you know, fantastic. Right. I feel happy now. Or like, oh, it went like down and you know, like,
how
give
do you
me,
feel today?
Yeah, get me answers. I think that to me is like, that is the horror story because people start to feel truly useless, like ineffectual, and then they give up. So if you could actually turn the reporting into something that you saw people really use, which is, again, why I want shorter reports.
Right.
I mean, if you want to dive deeper based on what the outcome of the report is and then you want 100 pages, I'll get you the 100 pages. But in the beginning—
You don't want to see that immediately. You want to see some actionable items.
I want to know why I need 100 pages.
Like, that's the first thing.
Yeah. Prove to me why I should actually ask for more and read more than whatever this is.
That,
and I think most executives feel that way.
That in its own right. I mean, that kind of separates the wheat from the chaff from people that just write reports for report's sake. And it's created an entire wake behind them that they know nobody's going to look at. But it looks so good on paper, right?
It's so pretty.
That's milquetoast. That's weak, right?
But that's also, unfortunately, what a lot of reporting is because at some point along the line, what happens is Frankenstein reports, right? So the report started out with great intentions. You know, the report started out one or two pages, had some good insights. And then somebody's like, you know, we actually noticed this month that the CTR curve data was really cool. So like, let's start adding that in. And then somebody else does the same thing. And then all of a sudden you've got this like really crappy Frankenstein report that's just this monstrosity that nobody wants to deal with because it's also usually really schizophrenic.
Right.
Like it's not cohesive. Right. It's all over the place. And nobody's actually analyzed any of it and been like, hey, does anybody notice that on page 7 and page 29 of the report, like these things, you know, like might be of importance?
There's no correlative. It's just throwing charts and charts and charts. And
because nobody actually reads from page 7 to page 29. So I think that, you know, like to me, watching that frustration happen regularly. And the problem, too, is like if you're actually an executive at a company and you knew your team was spending a ton of time making these like really crappy, senseless reports, you should be outraged, right? Because these are people you are paying money to do a job that's not actually doing a job, right? And if I knew I was spending, if I knew I was paying somebody like 50 or 60 grand a year or more, and I was, or an analyst, God forbid, I was paying an analyst to analyze report stuff and it was coming out and people weren't really reading it, or worse yet, they're reading it and not using it to make any actual difference. I would be mortified. You know,
you better believe it. If you're being given, as a CEO, if you're being given spreadsheets, right?
Yeah.
And you're being expected to actually deduce something from that spreadsheet, you know, you should be actually finding another employee there, because unless they're actually connecting the dots, or more importantly, utilizing tools that are out there that can actually make that correlative approach. I mean, that is useless unless you can act on it, right?
I have a top three rule, which is if I'm going to get on the phone and we're going to have a conversation, I don't just want the, like, do you have a minute approach, right? Like, maybe I do have a minute, but I don't want to use it on whatever the hell you're getting ready to do to me. So, like, do not stop me in the hall and be like, you have a minute. I'm like,
no!
Run. But it's like, you know, you a top three approach, which is basically what – three or fewer things do you need to tell me, or do you need to cover, or are the most important parts about this, and put those at the top of the email, even if you need to explain below, like, give me the TLDR, like, version of it.
Right.
Same thing with any report. Like, what are the top one to three things that I should take away? Because then I can dive into the report looking for those things. That's
don't
all
make
I
me
really
work.
Want.
Yeah, don't make me work.
Make me work smart.
Right.
Make me do the work that actually results in something happening.
Make my job easier. I mean, everybody has linkage in the chain, and yeah. We could go on for hours about this. Aaron, we wanted to get you out of here. Yeah, I know you got a meeting I get to, but we always ask this of every guest, and I just want to hear it from you, because I know we're going to get some juicy bits here. What really juicy bugs you?
Sickening.
It's going to be very visceral here. What really bugs you about your industry right now?
Oh, man.
There it is.
You
know I was going to ask this.
No, I actually forgot about this part. I blocked it out from last time when I think I got in some trouble.
Yeah.
I think some of it is...
Who do you hate the most right now?
We will need another segment soon. No, I think that it's... I think it's this kind of like cobbling together of a million different tools and then still having these huge gaps, right? Mm. So I get on the phone and people are like, I'm using, and I'm just going to throw some stuff out there, right?
Sure.
They're like, I'm using SEMrush, Moz, Screaming Frog, and Raven tools. And I'm like, that's a lot of stuff, dude. And like some of that really overlaps and some of it's like not. And we're like, so what are you, and the question I always ask is, because when I'm talking to folks, it's never, hey, can we replace all those things? Because, like, sure, we're an enterprise platform, and if you're willing to pay for an enterprise platform, like, we can replace damn near anything, right? But that's not the problem. The problem is, what is it you're trying to accomplish with all of those things? Like, what information did you need that required you to have all of those tools? And I think what happens right now is people get shiny object syndrome. They're like,
she's looking at me, man.
Fun new tool. Like, I'll try that out. And it's like, sure, you'll try it out. But what was your latency cost? How long did it take you to set that thing up?
Right.
How many people in your organization had to do some sort of integration in order to make it work? Did you actually do anything with the information once you freaking had it? Or how was it any different than the rest of the information you had?
And when was the last time you used it?
Right. It's like the gym membershipification of things, right? Or so this is going to sound really messed up, but back in the day, I was a really bad person for like signing up for dumb crap online or registering to do stuff. And I lived in San Francisco and I was just like, credit cards are fake. and essentially like once every like 6 months to a year, I would just like I would call the credit card company and be like, I lost my card. And so basically everything that I would find that would send me notifications that the payment had failed that I didn't use anymore, I'd be like, cancel, 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 cancel. Because it was like the quickest way to get like a really relevant list. And I think about that when I think about doing a business audit, right? Like how many of these stupid $29 a month, $49 a month, like whatever platforms do people have? And then all of a sudden you're actually like $5,000 or $6,000 into stuff that people haven't logged into in 6 or 7 months.
Right.
And honestly, if that's my platform, I hope you go. Like, not because I don't want you there, but because we weren't a good fit and I haven't done a great job convincing you why you should have logged in and I deserve to lose your business.
But you know, there's another model of, you know, set it and forget it, and I hope that you never...
Gym memberships.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a business model.
I know, but it, you know, and it's not, that is what I say frustrates me the most, right? Is it frustrates me that you would build a model that says I'm actually, because to me, what's so funny is the irony. The irony is I'm here proposing that we listen to people as an industry who is trying to help marketers. Mm. And if you build a marketing analytics software and refuse to listen to your own customers, like, you're just an asshole.
Right. And that's what you're defining right there is the next evolution of SaaS soft, you know, marketing products.
From your lips to God's ears. Like, seriously, I really hope that what would happen is that eventually people will get very sick of this idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hope.
You'd hope so. But, I mean, there's still an entire group of idiots that have pocketbooks and credit cards. And hopefully they'll cancel them and...
Well, but people don't want to do this whole thing. I think they got a little bit jaded about really big enterprise stuff too, right? You know, like they would get on the phone and they would want more than Moz, but mm-hmm. they would get on the phone with BrightEdge and BrightEdge would be like, "We don't get out of bed for less than $10,000 a month."
Yeah.
And then they're like, "Well, screw it. Like, I'll use Moz and SEMrush and Raven Tools and Google's, you know, Data Suite, and I'll just do all the things." Or Google Data Studio, and like, you just... There is a better way,
right.
And there's a smarter way. And at the end of the day, I would rather you actually sit down and listen than pay for 10 tools.
Pick one tool and use it.
Yeah.
Use it well, you know?
And then add something if you use that well, right?
Right.
Master that, and then you get to move on.
There it is right there. I do have to say one thing about SEMrush is that they do have a lot of feedback areas.
Yeah, they do. They're really listening. Good at community management. Right. I give them – it's funny. I bring them up a lot when I'm on calls, and I talk to folks, you know, especially if we're not a great fit.
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, a few places that I will refer folks to. And the SEMrush folks are great at community management and listening, but part of why they have a great content marketing program that's actually starting to kind of like come up on some of Moz's mm-hmm. stuff, right?
Yep.
Is they are listening and they're creating content based on listening. It's exactly. So weird how that works.
Who'd have thought? All right. Well, Aaron, it's always been a pleasure. And thank you so much. And please do not be a stranger.
No, I love you guys.
Thank you.
No, I actually just love the bourbon. You guys, I could take or leave. I could probably do the show myself.
And I got to give an apology out. I didn't reach out to Dougie. And we should have had him here on the
show.
Doug,
we miss you.
We miss you so much, Doug. So we got to get Aaron back in the house here soon and get Doug on the other cans here so we can truly have an Aaron bashing because, you know, I've been saved this time.
Got a little sadomasochistic tendency going in there?
Yes.
I like it.
I need to be whipped. Never mind.
Do not call me sir. Again.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
I know, it is right.
If you want to go back and check out the old episode of I literally called her sir.
Intentionally.
All right. Well, Aaron, like I said, it's always a pleasure. Any final thoughts for the digital marketers out there that are on the constant hunt for that tool that's going to be able to help communicate and help establish that bridge between different departments?
Yeah, I mean, stay safe and stay sane, right? So, like, find a way to get the information that you need. Again, talk to vendors who you think or strategists who you think will actually give you real feedback. If somebody tells you that they've got a great fit and it sounds like they would have said that no matter what you asked for, that's a little, like, used car salesman-y to me, and I steer clear of that. Not necessarily of the product, but of the salesperson, right? So I would find another representative to work with if you believe in the product mm-hmm. And you just want some straight shooting, because to me there's nothing worse than I'll give you this anecdotally about HubSpot, who I do really like, by the way, so I have no complaints, but what I will tell you is when I was going through my original vetting process, because we were moving over from one platform to another,
mm-hmm.
I explained what all I was looking for, and there were a couple of things that they were like, oh yeah, we can totally do that, and I wouldn't have cared if they said that they couldn't. It wouldn't have changed the game in terms of the sale. It would have just made me set things up in a way that made my life easier, or it would have made me ensure that I had a fallback, right? But then I get in there and they're like, oh yeah, that's actually just, it's on the roadmap. It'll be like a year. Or actually, yeah, we can do that, but it'll cost you an extra $1,000 a month. And so to me, I still, like, 99% of it I'm totally cool with. But that really did leave a bad taste in my mouth,
right,
about the original experience because I just wanted somebody to shoot straight with me. Right. It wouldn't have changed my decision, but it did change my perception of my decision and of the organization that I was dealing with. And they've done a million right things since then. And I do love my team over there, so that's great. But that's why I said I built that form, right? Like for Demand Sphere. And I was like, is Demand Sphere right for you? And if not, I will just make a better suggestion. Somebody here will tell you what we think is better for you, whether Very it's cool. based on keyword volume or location tracking or like whatever it is, or your budget. We're just like, meh, we're not like we're probably not like sure. a good situation. You want
to
try?
You've got a role to play in this economy or in this ecosystem. Is just don't try to pull in as much as business as you can. If it's not a good fit, be that Sherpa, be that guidance. So because
that, or just be quiet.
Yeah,
that's your option. You don't have to guide anybody, but you should sure as hell not steer them wrong. because I think that. If somebody's not a right fit for you now, it doesn't mean that they won't be a year or 5 years from now, but right. they'll never be a right fit if you lie to them and get them and turn them off.
And you know what's going to happen at that point in time.
Yeah. And you're just never going to, you're not going to get a second chance.
No.
So you can't waste your first chance.
I was on a demo call today and the software company I was looking at, I was talking about certain integrations of the platform. We have Jira as one of our platforms that we're doing our agile marketing management on. And yeah, they integrate there, but we also use Harvest for our own timekeeping. And they immediately went, well, we don't have one, but we have the Zapier over here that we can absolutely do this. I'm like, come on, just... Yeah, I know what Zapier is. You don't have to keep on going to that screen
yep.
for everything that you do. Yeah, okay, if you don't do it, say you don't do it. Don't. It's not a deal killer.
Yeah.
But they're so scared of that that they'll either promise something or they'll keep it on brush it under the rug until it comes back and bites them.
Yeah, there's a great book called Question-Based Selling, or I can't remember what it's called. It's something like that. I'll send it to you. like the name of it in case somebody cares. But I doubt it.
See how she pulls you? She was going to actually send me the book.
No, I was never going to send you the book. I was always just going to send you the name.
Damn.
But the thing I like about it is it talks about how sales needs to revert back to like that better idea of like really understanding what people are up to and not this like I'll never say no mm-hmm. mentality, right?
Yep.
This I'll never say no and I'm going to do anything to close the deal thing really freaks people out. And it's very, I think it's off-putting, it's disingenuous. And this idea that we were talking about at the beginning of the show about mm-hmm. a more genuine content experience or a more tailored content experience. There's nothing about the I'll never say no to you like sales tactic that right. feels like anybody actually gives a shit about you.
Right.
Mm. Sorry, I should have kept talking when I realized you.
I literally was taking a drink, but she fell short. You're absolutely right. And I think what we're seeing, what we're tapping into here is this is common across sales, across marketing. You've got to listen and you got to be able to steer by those questions and be authentic. And I know it sounds cliche, but that's where we are. And it's the buyer's market right there. And they can sniff disingenuousness and BS a mile away, right?
And even if they can't and they're not that in tune at the beginning, they're sure as hell going to figure it out once they're few weeks, months, whatever, into your product.
Yep.
Like, so they will figure it out.
Yeah, they absolutely will. All right. Anything we can promote for you on your way out?
No, I mean, I honestly, like I said, I don't love to talk a ton about like just Demand Sphere this, Demand Sphere that, because I think the audience is pretty wide and varied. If you're looking for something, hopefully you'll find us because we've created a piece of content or something that's relevant to you. And, you know, other than that, I would say keep listening to podcasts and keep participating in industry conversations, because I think that these kinds of conversations are really important. And listen to some stuff outside of your industry every now and then. We were just talking about really varying on that panel I was moderating about varying stuff, because not just for informational sake, but because it inspires you. Sometimes you'll hear an idea from something that's a different thing altogether, and you're like, "Oh shit, I could totally apply that to what I do."
Absolutely, absolutely.
So yeah,
gotta have the eyes open. All right, well, thanks so much. You gotta follow Erin on her Twitter. It's Texas Girl Erin, Erin, spelled like a guy's name, evidently.
Tweets are my own.
be careful. Yes. Be very careful. But from all of us over at Edge, thanks so much for listening and jumping into the show. Be sure to jump into our audio podcast on a regular basis. And if we're not where you are with our audio, just let us know. We'll certainly get you over, except for Podbean. I'm going to stay away from Podbean. I don't like Podbean. ask me why later. All right, so special thanks to our colleagues at Site Strategics, especially Erin. You know what? You're doing a bang-up job, and we certainly congratulate you on the demand sphere, and we're glad to have you in-house, but we're certainly wanting you to come back at a later date.
Always.
Excellent. All right, so be sure to check out everything over. You're switching the cameras on me, man. Be sure to check out all of the must-see videos over at edgeofthewebradio.com. That's edgeofthewebradio.com. Tom, who are we talking to next week?
We got Brad Geddes.
Oh, cool.
Not coming in. He'll be remote, but...
Well, we should have more guests in here. It's fun.
Yeah,
we can pick on them in person.
There's alcohol.
And there's not for everybody. Just for the ones we want to irritate.
But yeah, PPC next week with Brad Geddes.
Very cool. All right, so for all of us over at Such Beats, thanks so much for joining us. And let us know how we're doing. Rate and review us on all of the platforms. And we'll talk to you next week. Do not be a piece of cyber driftwood. Bye-bye.